lost everything. Until that dog arrived on my doorstep. A final gift for my wife. In that moment, I received some semblance of hope. An opportunity to grieve on alone. And your son took that from me.
Hakon stole that from me. Killed that from me! People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Welcome to the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast. Look at the entire John Wick franchise.
Bonjour, Monsieur Wick, and welcome to La Resistance.
Join Garrett.
Well, your little act of uncivil disobedience inspired me, John. I'm branching out, spreading my wings.
Matt.
You working again?
No, just sorting some stuff out.
And Adam.
This life follows you.
As they earn their coins by reviewing each film of the Keanu Reeves starring franchise, leading up to a review of Ballerina, released by Lionsgate Films earlier this year.
30 paces. In the event that both parties survive, each will approach the other at increments of 10 paces until only one remains.
So unholster your ears in these confines, percolated media listeners.
I'm not asking you to kill anyone.
The Percolated Media John Wick Retrospective begins now.
If you would be so kind as to follow me.
John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum. Released May 17, 2019. Budget was $75 million. They upped it. And a box office take of $327.7 million. And this was directed once again by Chad Stahelski. Alright guys, 2019, 2 years after Chapter 2. It sure didn't take them long.
No, but I counted the days until we finally saw a trailer. I was amped up. I felt encouraged, actually, because this came out a little bit of a year after Mission Impossible Fallout, which I thought kind of rejuvenated the American action film, non-superhero capes and shit. I could not have been more excited. And I saw the $75 million price tag, and I'm like, okay, once again, they're incrementally increasing because they're, I feel like in the second one, they justified the money. And this one more than doubled the budget, but it's still under $100 million, which is pretty impressive considering what the average movie is made for nowadays. Let alone something that has a very devoted fan base. By this point, people knew who John Wick was.
Oh, yeah, and this took in the money. It opened against some pretty hefty competition, and it still went on to do very well. It ended up grossing over $300 million, and that's pretty good when you're up against Aladdin.
Aladdin, Avengers was going to play for the whole year. Yep. What also helps is that, what's also more impressive, it's a hard R. And it's still bringing in a lot of money. You know, that kind of dilutes your audience. If these are PG-13, they'd probably make a lot more money. But people would also be like, mm-hmm. You know, how many times can you watch someone get shot and the camera just cuts?
Cuts away. Adam, excited for this?
Massively. This was, oh God, I could not wait. Especially because this kind of felt like an amuse-bouche for Avengers coming up. To me, this kicked off that summer, really. Aladdin was not something that I was going to see. Maybe one day, never. We will not do live-action Disney remakes, but I got some thoughts on those.
Too many of them.
Yeah.
God damn.
If we thought Stephen King was a labor of love.
This doubles those. Yeah,
because you got to do the originals. You got to do all the video sequels.
Yeah, Disney gets something like Alice or Maleficent, and they think that just means everything. John Wick. I was ridiculously excited, bought my tickets as soon as they went on sale, IMAX showing, and yeah, this was one that was just high on my list to see that year.
Well, as I mentioned last week, the end of last week's film pissed me off. So I'm not going to say I wasn't excited for this, though. I was. I always up to see Keanu Reeves in this role and the action that Stahelski shoots. So I was excited, and I was excited because Derek Kolstad had some help in writing the script. They realized that he's not going to carry this by himself. So we had it Chris Collins, who worked on The Sopranos. He wrote a few episodes of that. And a name that we're going to talk a lot about in the next few weeks, a guy by the name of Shay Hatton, did a write of the script as well. At this point, he was the writing assistant of Shane Black, believe it or not. And here he is.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, here he is helping with this particular script and next week's script. And by the way, he is the sole credited writer on Ballerina, which is the movie we're going to end this on. So, Matt, what do you think about adding new writers to this?
Well, seeing multiple writers credited, given the context of the first two movies having as much dialogue as necessary to get audiences to not fall asleep amidst all the gunplay. I hate to say that about audiences, but given my latest theater experiences, I think I'm being proven correct that people are getting dumber as we progress through time. So I didn't understand the rationale to get so many writers, because I didn't want this to be too many cooks in the kitchen. Stahelski proved he could man one of these despite losing his co-director and not miss much of a beat. So I was concerned is not the right word, but there was a lot of skepticism when I saw that. Not that I was overly pessimistic, because as soon as the trailers came out, I went, holy shit, this looks amazing.
But last week you mentioned you were scared when you saw Wick on that horse.
Yeah, because that, I'm like, really, you're doing this in the middle of New York at night? It's just, and I've seen that. I mean, it doesn't help the fact that I'm rewatching this after Dial of Destiny did this during the day, and mm-hmm. I still didn't buy it.
Adam, how'd you feel about more writers on this?
That was the kind of thing that worried me a little bit. If we didn't need it before, what now necessitates bringing on additional writers, unless you just couldn't crack it and suddenly you're going in different places? So it worried me a little bit, but that worries me more when I see something gestate for 4, 5, 6 years, you know, and you got multiple story by and multiple writing credits. With this thing coming out as quick as it did, it made me think they did have a plan. You just needed somebody to help brush up on some of the long-winded dialogue that these movies are known to have.
Yeah, but seeing him on that horse going through those streets, I could not help but get excited. So here we go. We start off with some credits containing a cross and a gun with the words John Wick Parabellum scrawled across the screen. We move on to some rain-soaked streets as John Wick is on the run. We're seeing more files on Wick as being excommunicado, as he's running with his still-unnamed dog past people with umbrellas. Matt, you can't help but think of Blade Runner when you see people with these clear umbrellas, right?
Oh, positively. Especially the fact that Blade Runner, the sun never comes out. It's nothing but rain.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a provocative look to start this. And again, it's befitting of the chapter subtitle. It's almost like you turned the page, or it's a new volume of a graphic novel, because it's picking up. Let me ask you this. Would you have been pissed off more so if there was never a third one?
Oh my God. Well, here's the thing. Knowing that there was a third one coming out, I was angry because I think at this point these movies are all sequenced, right? They're all part of a whole story. Instead of having self-contained movies, we're having movies that are just a chapter. And
yeah, I look at these like I look at Lord of the Rings, where it's one movie stretched out into parts.
No, to me it feels like they're making it up as they go. And Lord of the Rings was already established before they even started shooting those. And plus they shot all three of those in a row. So I don't know. It has the feel of making it up as they go.
And it bugged me, especially with the second one. Now, I could almost think that final scene in last week's film was added only when they had known, you know what, we're going to get to do a 3. Because this thing is done so quick, they knew it before that was done. Like I said then, I think you could almost end that movie with John Wick sitting in the burned out carcass of his home, roll credits, and that thing finishes. I think it was a setup, and it doesn't bug me because I was excited for it. And I think based on how this thing opened, you know, I think it got a lot of audiences excited to see what we were going to have. Okay. I generally agree with you. Generally, I hate sequel bait, but for some reason, I think it just fits with this.
It worked for me in the way that like Ghost Protocol teasing the Syndicate at the end worked for me. That's very sequel baity.
Yeah, but we weren't sure we were going to get another one of those either. I want to jump on two of your points from last week that you guys ended last week's podcast on. One, Matt, we do get what I was so angry about answered in this, and that I respect. Two, Adam, to your point, this is supposed to only take place an hour after the last film and we're at night? What's going on here?
Yeah, and it definitely doesn't take place during the winter where the sun sets at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. We see Sharon and Winston. They're talking about the ramifications of what Wick has done on the Continental's property as a homeless man just kind of looks at Wick and says, "Tick tock, Wick and his dog get in the cab and ask to go to the Continental. We're hearing Wick's excommunicado is in effect in 20 minutes as Wick stops by a library and gets some stuff left for him in a book, including coins and a picture of him and his dead wife.
Yeah, and the rosary too.
Rosary, yep.
But, you know, that's also religious because that, you know, that's Catholic. You know, you use the rosary for, you know, say your Hail Marys. I mean, he basically has to throw up a Hail Mary just to get any semblance of help in this movie. So I guess prayer really is his most powerful weapon. But I also like that they're using actual New York locations, like the public library. That's a fun place to stage an action sequence because Lord knows we've seen like the Grand Central Station, and it's not like they went to Madison Square Garden, and you know the Knicks are, you know, Carmelo Anthony is playing at this time. Actually, no, this is 2019. I think this is a cool way to set up the movie, and it feels like you tense up with every passing second because you know it's like waiting till kickoff.
Very much so, especially that rising tension of the time. I mean, John, while he's asking where a book is and the librarians look it up, he's looking at his clock, at his watch, like I am when I'm trying to get out of the house and I'm waiting to for my wife to come downstairs and I'm like, let's go already. You feel like he knows he's on the clock, literally, and we see everybody waiting for that clock to expire too. We see these assassins just waiting for that death knell bell to go.
Wick is cornered by Ernest, a tall assassin, who says, who will know the difference if he kills him right now? Now, this was a basketball player, I guess, that Chad Stahelski wanted to put in here, because last week we had the sumo guys attacking Wick. This week he wanted to have someone not wide, but tall. And of course, he towers over Reeves, and this is a fun fight.
I do 7'4". Like, this is him fighting Jaws, basically, for all intents. Yeah. Not just because he uses a book in his mouth, but I think this is cool, but also the line, like, what good is $14 million if you're not alive to spend it.
Good stuff.
This is such a fun way to start it. The way that the camera shot, you know, John Wick never looks small, but the way that it shoots it over his shoulder to make John is just, it's good stuff. You know, nice callback to Kareem, you know, decades before. And it's just, you know, we saw the pencil. Now we're going to see a book.
It's also not, I appreciate they got someone, like, it's not LeBron James or Kevin Durant, where I'm like, okay, I don't see a character. You know, you got someone who was known. He was with the 76ers at this time, but it's not so distracting.
Agreed.
But it also feels in this world, because there's something very Eastern European, you know, that kind of just runs its course throughout this film. So you're starting it that way. We're going to get a lot of that later on. It feels perfectly apropos to what we have.
Yeah, you know, they're setting up for Chapter 5 when he runs into Luka Doncic at a Chick-fil-A.
The fight is on, music-free, through the library as Wick twists his arms and chops his throat. He then ends it by doing the Ed Norton curb stomp using a book, which was fantastic.
Oh, I was like, I give the movie points. I've never seen that before.
And neither have I, yeah.
Like, and this one more so than the first two, they're having fun with how many creative ways can we take people out?
Yeah, and that was one of my big problems with last week's film, too. I just felt like last week's fights were just more stylized versions of what we saw before. Here, everything is very creative.
Completely agree. I will say book over pencil, just because of how creative you got to get to pull this off.
More importantly, this movie might as well take place in Australia because everything is designed to kill you in this guy's hands. Like nothing is safe. He could be holding like a newspaper and find a way to slit your throat with it.
Wick runs out as he's spotted, and we're hearing the excommunicado is in effect in 10 minutes, and even the Bowery is abiding by the excommunicado at this point. Wick goes to his key maker, a.k.a. Doctor, as the clock keeps ticking, and he is down to 1 minute. I love this, man. I love how he's back up against the clock. The doctor's like, well, you're about ready. He's like, no. I still have time.
That's great, and I love that he is also counting down the time for Doc once Doc starts. He's got enough integrity that he's going to make sure he's not at risk.
It's not a second more. I mean, if this was Peter Stefanowitz, it would have been the Brian Butterfield diet, where as soon as 24 hours is up, you stop eating and you have your rest day.
It goes into effect with the clocks going off, and the doctor apologizes as he has to abide by the rules. Computers send alerts, as Winston says, and away we go. Wick fights his way out of the doctor's chair, and the doctor even helps tell him how many pills to take, and he even gives him a gun. Wick shoots him twice as the doctor wishes him luck.
Yeah, and he's such a good shot that he knows exactly where to shoot him without hitting a major artery.
Yes. Wick heads into the streets as he runs up the stairs of a very weirdly lit building, grabs a shotgun and loads some shells before doing the same with a revolver and a few other guns. So here we have the equip scene.
Well, I love how he goes to like a New York like armoring museum. Yeah. And there's a great reference to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where he listens to the gun being constructed like, like Lee Van Cleef does in the movie when he's assembling it. It's the exact same thing.
All that work, all that he puts into it. For a single shot.
Yeah. He shoots a guy at the door before fighting a couple of thugs using not just bullets but kicks and glass. They grab some swords behind them and make their way through the store on the floor, just plunging five knives right into one guy. This was fun.
This is like watching the Three Stooges meeting John Rambo. Where it borders on slapstick with the amount of punishment some of these guys can take, but it's also so very well choreographed and surprisingly brutal. Like this one is probably the most violent by far. I mean, not that any of these movies are sunshine and rainbows, but I feel like they upped the ante with every single one, but I don't feel like I'm watching carnage without purpose. And also he brought this on himself.
Well, that's the main thing, right? All of this carnage has a purpose in this one.
Yeah. This entire scene with I like that we get some moments where it's not just the gung fu. And I do think this is a lot of Keanu Reeves sensibility, and he gets to call some more shots, you know, on the way some of this is now. You know, he loves the Asian cinema part of it. So this, it's not really a hallway, but just, you know, but you got, you know, all these display cases, you know, with all these weapons and knives and the way that they just keep breaking into them to use them over and over. And the long takes that they are shooting, I think really give this movie a little more heft. So many other directors would be quick cutting their way out of it. So many actors would have to be quick cut their way out of it. But all of these are longer takes than we normally see. And I think that gives a textile feel to this fight. And every blade we feel go into these sons of bitches. Look, they know they got to up it. And they are starting off on a foot where they're going to get the audience engaged right off the bat. Which I needed because... holy shit, my screen was not fully lit, my sound was popping, and the lights were not fully turned down. So this is going on, and I'm trying to be engaged into an amazing scene, and AMC Brentwood fucked me again.
It seems to happen every time you go to an IMAX showing.
Yeah, that's why I've stopped.
Just shoot somebody and make yourself excommunicated from the theater.
Well, I needed it too after the end of last week. And right away, Stahelski has me right in the palm of his hand again. Because this stuff in the beginning, I am fully engaged. Of course, I was fully engaged at the beginning of last week's film too. Here, I feel like I'm even more fully engaged because I have recovered from the anger I felt at the end of last week's film. So Wick sticks the knife right into this guy's eye. Ouch. Eye stuff. Ow.
Oh.
Jesus. We see Sharon taking Wick's dog as Wick is hit with yet another car. Seems to be the running joke in this series. How many times he gets
hit? Yeah, I like how he gets hit by a car at the opening of every movie.
Yeah, I know, me too.
Which I guess makes sense, though, because Halle Berry's in this movie.
Fuck. And he started by running. So.
God. Wick makes his way into a horse stable, and he gets into another fight. And here's the image from the trailer, White Matt. Wick riding a horse right through the streets.
No, it's not that.
Wait. Yeah,
how the horse... Yeah, we got to talk about how the horse gave some sweet chin music in the worst way.
Yes.
Because, holy shit, I couldn't believe that. It's not bad enough that he does it once. He does it twice to the same guy.
Look, there's been a few movies where you get mass audience reactions where everybody's doing the same thing. This is one of those. Because you're setting up, you're like, okay, you see a whore. Oh, shit! And everybody has got the same reaction. Oh, fuck, this is glorious.
This is fun. You know what put me in mind of? Matt, those years ago when we did the Transformers series, I mentioned right before the release of Age of Extinction, I was excited because I saw Optimus Prime on Grimlock, and I thought that was going to be a fun scene. That only happens for about 5 seconds in that movie. Here, we see an intro of it in the trailer, and it is paid off gloriously.
You don't have to wait 2 hours to see that.
And that's true, too. So police chase Wick on horseback under a bridge as Wick shoots one in the neck, and the other crashes and slams into a car. Then we hear that Wick's contract has increased to $15 million as he goes to a ballerina class. Oh boy, more on this later in the series. And presents a rosary to what's called the director, played by Angelica Houston. Wow. Now they're starting to get these big-named actors and actresses who are asking to be in these movies.
Oh yeah, I mean, you got two Oscar winners joining the cast in this one. And No, much like Ian McShane, and Willem Dafoe, she adds a whole different degree of legitimacy to this. I mean, they also gave her, this role could have been very cartoonish.
Yes.
Especially with them being Russian. We talked about in the first one that they kind of avoided the Ivan Drago level of stereotypes. This could have been that times 10. But I love everything with the Ruska Roma and how they're woven in, no pun intended, and tying this to John Wick's backstory without getting a ton of flashbacks. It does everything well, and Houston's great. Like, I think this is another terrific bit of both casting and world building.
Brilliant casting. Yeah, this very easily could have turned into Moose and Squirrel very fast. They have someone who, I mean, it's Angelica fucking Houston. The Witches of Eastwick. I mean, this woman's been around since my dad's childhood, and it's that legitimacy is the right word. There's just something, she fleshes out this world so very well, and just seeing her gives you a sense of belief in this theater.
The director says that the high table stands above all, and she says that art is pain and life is suffering. Somehow he got out only to come back, and she asks, is this really all over a puppy? Which I thought was a nice line. They walk by a dance and karate class as Wick is asked to sit. The director continues to say that she can't help Wick and asks him what he really wants. He says he wants to cash his ticket as safe passage to Casablanca. But before he goes, he is branded, as the director says, you can never come home again. So I'm with Matt. I think this fleshes out the world beautifully. Last week's movie, I felt the way it expanded the world, it wasn't really engaging to me. Here, I am very engaged with what's going on. Maybe it's just by the presence of Houston, too.
The whole Giovanni, and I think it goes a little far of kookiness. The ticket, you can't come home. This is when I'm thinking that you're a little too slick for yourself. You want those relationships. You want that. I don't need to know who he was as a child or even hinted. This is when I think some of the lore is going a little too far for what I want.
I'm in almost direct lockstep with Garrett, although neither of us should be doing ballet. I think we both bust a hip trying to do this. But I also like that if you notice when they're walking through and you see them training, they're using Sambo style of wrestling, which we've seen Wick use numerous times. Yeah. Like, they're very careful about what they show, and it also adds context to the tattoos that he has on his back, which they never address. You just see them in the first two. Yeah. Like, they don't explain what they are. And of course, a guy named John Wick would be like a pseudonym for his actual name. That makes total sense, because Keanu has some, I don't know what his nationality is. He's kind of like a mix of everything.
Yeah, I think he's Hawaiian.
Because I think he's born in Lebanon.
Yeah, he's Lebanese, but he's mixed.
Yeah, so I think that kind of casting an actor like that to be kind of an amalgam of a bunch of different cultures because of the life he's lived makes a lot of sense. I don't understand the brand, though, just because how will they know? It's on his back.
Yeah, unless he goes shirtless, you can't know.
Yeah, it's like, unless he's on the beach.
Yeah.
unless he's on the beach. It's not like getting branded on your forehead.
Yeah.
Which really, the Ruska Roma, they should do that. Like the way they used to brand ex-Nazis.
Back to the adjudicator, arriving at the Continental to talk to Winston. He says that Wick declined to walk away and broke the rules, and the adjudicator says that she's there because he broke the rules within the hotel. She goes on to look at the body of Santino, and she says that it was a .45 ACP. She then says he stood by and walked away, and she brings up what I did last week. Why give him an hour to get away if he wasn't his friend? I was so glad this was addressed. I was so angry last week that I had completely forgotten that they actually addressed it in this, and I like that they wrote this in.
I also love how they don't move the body. They treat it like it's a crime scene, which it is for all intents and purposes, so I like that. I think it's a little bit corny to have an adjudicator or like the only reason they didn't call it the arbiter is because Halo 2. That's, I think that's the reason why they didn't do that. But I like that even the high table they have a legal department.
Yeah.
It cracks me up because it's that great line from Mars Attacks. If you want to conquer the world, you're going to need lawyers.
I think I'd like more seeing this different area of the Continental. You know, they got a body disposal unit down here in the basement. That's kind of a big deal. I like Asia Kate Dillon. I think they do a pretty damn good job. Some of this high table stuff, I think, is not all the way thought out yet. I think they're trying to lay some breadcrumbs, but I don't think they know where they want to go. And I think that starts to be apparent. I don't know. Some of this high table shit starts to bug me.
Yeah, especially. So I like that it's almost like the pirate group from the third one, where everyone has like their own territory, but they operate as one governing body. Mm-hmm. But even then, they still have someone above them, as we come to find out. Which that doesn't bother me, because I do like the whole thing that even, like, you know, even Arthur answered to God. The Knights of the Round Table answered to a higher calling. So, you know, there is a lot of religious shit to the point that Mel Gibson might as well be in this movie instead of the Continental TV show. But at least they're consistent with everybody utilizing it. Like, it plays a factor in all of these different groups.
The adjudicator then tells Winston to get his affairs in order in 7 days and that his successor will be named. We cut to the Bowery King, once again played by, this time, tempered down Loris Fishburne, and she criticizes his version of the internet, and she also criticizes him for not killing John Wick when he had the chance. She brings out the gun that he gave him, and the fact that he gave Wick 7 bullets, she'll give him 7 days to advocate his throne.
He does that for both of them.
I'd love that line when he's like, I see the internet. I'm like, oh shit, you gotta give him a reference to something, and that's just...
He proclaims himself the Bowery, and the kingdom is his and his alone, but she still tells him that he has 7 days.
Of course, the only thing she needed to leave that was a videotape.
We see Wick arrive at Casablanca, and it doesn't take him long to get into a fight, though the fight is stopped, and he is welcome to Casablanca. He says he needs to talk to Sophia Alazar. He is taken there and is quite, quote-unquote, greeted by a Cujo-looking dog. And is then shot by she who runs the Maricon Continental, Sophia Alazar, played by Halle Berry. Matt, was I the only one who thought she was just going to play the Jinx here? She's going to be the Bond girl once again and tag along for this entire movie? She doesn't. She's here for just a set of scenes.
It's the most I've liked her in a very long time.
Same.
And I also give her the utmost amount of respect for putting in the work with the gun training and all that. If you watch the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, she trained hard for this.
I like that she's not just the eye candy. She's not here to, like, take the franchise over the way they tried to do with Jinx. Also, I think the fact that she's older, her and Keanu are basically the same age, almost. Mm-hmm. So I think this works. And I was surprised, because I was kind of prepared to be abrasive towards her appearance.
Yeah, same here. And I even complimented her when we did Kingsman as well. I thought she was fun in that sequel, and she played a backseat in that one as well.
I think she's a very good addition. I like that we're getting Continental in a different country. I think that's a nice way to expand it out. I have a hard time accepting that he got here to Casablanca. He can't walk down the streets of New York, but he can get to the other side of the globe. We're missing some things here, and that just bugs me, because it's clear he can't walk through the streets of Casablanca safely until he can. I start to have issues with what they're telling me. Because if everything's centered, if he can't walk down the street, I don't know how he's getting to the other side of the country. Or other side of the globe. I like Halle Berry. The dogs, they're fine until they're overkill. I love that they have somebody his age that's going to do this. I love that she clearly put in the work, wanted to do it. And I love that she's also not in this throughout the entire film. I think that is a brilliant choice that not everybody would make. But I think she's a really good get.
No, especially when you have a name like that. Mm-hmm. You almost feel like self-justification to have her tag along, especially since he's excommunicated. You have more runway, so to speak, to let her be the partner. And I do have an answer, though, for why, like, to answer your believability problem. You're not going to like it, but because he's Batman. I have to look at this the same way that people justify all the bullshit Bruce Wayne does in The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh shit, he literally did just climb out of a hole and fly back home.
Yeah, but he doesn't have that bullshit fucking bulletproof suit that he had last week, so.
No, but he's got the ability to withstand a nuclear bomb.
Yes. Sophia says that marker doesn't mean shit, and he says that when she needed help, he was there, and they're bonded by the blood on the marker. So once again, Matt, like we've talked about, we're not getting this stuff shown to us, we're getting it told to us, which gives us a good background on these characters.
Yeah, and I now like the traversal of him using the marker,
yeah.
Which I also like that he thought this out well enough, despite being on the clock, to go to the library to get this specific marker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes you think that he's got them hidden probably in different places. Because yeah, you would think.
He's got like 5 bat caves throughout the world. And I'm like, when did you have time to do this?
He would be a man that you would not want to owe a favor to, but he would be happy to collect them.
Sophia tells him to sit, and she says that she doesn't go around shooting people in the head anymore. He says that he wants to try and enlist the guidance of her old boss, Barada. She says if Wick doesn't kill Barada, he will certainly kill Wick himself. And she brings up that her daughter was saved by Wick and that she doesn't want to know where her daughter is. Sophia says that she has to kill that part of herself just to keep herself safe, and that's why she gave him the marker in the first place. Wick says either way, they will be even, but Sophia says actually after this, they are less than even. Meanwhile, the adjudicator puts a marker down at a restaurant and says that Wick has broken the rules of the table. He says he's interested in serving her as pretty much her assassin for hire. So we cut to a dance number as people associated with the director are killed and they take the stage. She orders them to leave, but the adjudicator says her penance will be paid in blood. She asks the director to pledge her fealty, and the director says that she has served before getting stabbed through the hands.
I mean, this is, you know, stigmata is a big part of Catholicism.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Wick tells Sophia that they're not going in like the old days, and I hate how Barry says these lines. It's never just a conversation. I like Barry for the most part, but sometimes the way she delivers lines makes me laugh.
You know, you kind of glossed over one thing, though, when she gets her assassin, her ninja for hire. That's the Iron Chef.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to
like,
bring
it up. Is so... Yeah. What a... I can't see him on screen without just doing the... And the ingredient is...
I didn't want to bring it up. That's just a weird bit of casting.
But he fits in this world. Like, once he's in here, I'm like, okay, great. And it's because his grandfather, I think, started the original version of it. But yeah, that's, for those that don't know, the Zero, Mark Dacascos, is Iron Chef.
Yeah, well, also, like, he's like a fifth degree black belt. So if you're going to get someone who understands how to do this and be comparable to Keanu, it's a good addition. But I also like that he's written like the annoying fanboy.
Yes!
That was a awesome touch. I like that too, and we'll definitely get into it as we get into the film, but that was a nice bit of writing. I agree with that.
Because like this could have been the cliche Ronin samurai type of Japanese, very stoic, you know, no nonsense. They actually have fun with that expectation.
So Wick and Sophia, they meet up with Barada, who makes nice with Wick and tells him that he's certain they have much to discuss. Wick says he's not there to kill Barada, as Barada talks about where the word assassin comes from. Wick says he seeks to make amends as Barada pets Sophia's dog. He says he can't tell him where the elder is, as the elder can only choose to find him. He then tells Wick to walk in the desert until you're almost dead, and when he's down to his final breath, the elder will find him. This is so video game-esque. This is one part of this movie I did not like. He's supposed to do this on faith.
I mean, there is a lot of religious allegory.
That's true.
He has to be like Moses and wander in the desert. I mean, look, if you talk to a burning bush, that would not be the most absurd thing in these movies.
More than one. I gotta say, as soon as he starts walking through this castle, these next 10 minutes are kind of... 5 minutes. I got lots of problems with.
Really?
I don't need to see them making the coins. I actually resent that they show them melting the gold for that. I don't need it. I don't want it. Seeing Barada appear, explaining, I got the first marker. I got the first coin. I can't stand this. I can't. And then even just saying an elder, that you got a table and you're going to tell me that there's someone, you got a high table that exists, but you're going to tell me, oh, fuck the table. You got to go to this other person beyond. You got a super boss, not just the boss.
Wow, I'm the exact opposite of you, Adam. I liked seeing these coins being made. I like the way this expands the world. I like how Barada is taking claim of this. I enjoyed this.
Well, I like that it's like religion. You want to be the first to discover. You want to show you want to show your piousness by having those tangible artifacts. So I like that he sees himself as kind of the collector, and that's like, you know, gives him divinity. But I also love, they tease you the fact that, oh, he's going to kill this dog.
Oh, my fucking God. Okay.
And there would have been a riot in the theater if that happened.
Dude, I'm getting to that. So Barada asks what Wick will offer in return and then says that he will keep Sophia's dog, but she refuses. And then Barada pulls out a gun and shoots the fucking dog. And my God, I was the same way. I was in the theater. I winced. I was there by myself. I winced and I was like, what the fuck? They did not just kill another dog.
Oh, that theater went silent like John Wick got shot in the head.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I freaked the fuck out. Of course, we're going to see that the dog wears a bulletproof vest, which I like. But yeah, that threw me for a loop.
Yeah, this was extremely shocking. I was just, oh, camp. And you know this is now the flashpoint. You might as well have just tossed a grenade right in the middle of everything.
Yep. I like that this dog is wearing this bulletproof vest, though, and just goes apeshit after this. So a firefight breaks out as the dog attacks. She shoots Barada's leg and then tells Wick that they have to go. They make their way out, shooting guys as they go. This, again, like last week, it is kind of hard to see, but it's lit a little better. But I enjoy this fight. I liked seeing the dogs here. It's like a weapon in a video game, right? Like, they send these dogs through these windows, and we have one, of course, it's got to attack the balls as well, because you got to see a dog attack balls in these movies. This was fun.
Well, it's almost like they're saying, hey, this is revenge for the dog dying in the first movie. It's almost cathartic to watch this. And, you know, Barry is actually believable with Keanu, which I also was not expecting. I thought this was going to be one of those things where you clearly see her stunt double and, you know, you only see her from behind. Maybe there's like an insert shot of her face, but no, it's... Like I said, she put in the work, and I give her all the credit in the world for that, because I can think of a lot of other big names who would clamor to be a part of this and not do so.
And walk through it. And one of my big issues with last week was we saw those fights before in the first film, but they were just stylized in the second. Here, we're at least getting stuff that we haven't seen.
I think it's good. I don't think it holds a candle to what we saw last week, but I think it's good. I think that the dogs are good until like the fifth time they get used, and then I'm like, okay, I get it. He's going to bite someone in the nuts. It's good. I think Halle Berry is pretty damn superb. I like when they change up the canines, at least, you know, jumping through the windows, they're going to maul them from inside. But I think it goes on a little long. I think it's clear that they're on a stage for part of this, because the lighting kind of stops at level one and it's all black just above it. But it's a cool scene. It's a different place than we have, but I don't think it holds a candle to what we've gotten previously.
Can't hold a candle because their hands would be shaking so much watching all this.
I'll agree with you on the staging part, because at one point it looks like this dog just kind of takes this guy off this platform and he falls into padding. Also, how this dog scaled this wall, I'll never know, but I don't care because I'm having fun watching this. They get inside a car and we cut to the desert as Sophia drops him off, black suit and all. And the scene of her swishing this water and just kind of spitting it back in made me cringe.
Really? Because I would pay for that bottle? I'm just kidding. I don't know. That makes it a little more appealing on my end. I'm just gonna...
Wow. Sophia says that he's going to die as he gives her the marker and says, consequences. We see Wick walking the desert hills in his black suit as it goes from night to day. Guys, am I the only one reminded of Spaceballs here as he goes through this desert?
I'm reminded that it's time to go to the bathroom and refill my popcorn. What the hell? I'm angry right now walking through the desert. This is something different. I don't... Oh, fuck me.
I just kept expecting him to go, room service, as he's walking. I don't know. I'm with this.
As a Jew, I'm tired of watching my... haven't I seen the desert enough?
This is when Mel Gibson should have shown up from the Continental.
Oh, my God. So Wick falls down a hill as we cut to Zero and his fellow assassins making their way through some fools. The Bowery King tells the adjudicator to go fuck herself, and she tells him that his severance will be paid with 7 cuts. He says, long live the king, as Zero slices him. You guessed it, 7 times. And I thought this would be the death of him. No, we're going to see him come back later.
Nope, just 6 a paper cut.
Yeah.
By the way, there's only 6 cuts, and I counted.
Did you really?
Yeah, the seventh is when the camera cuts.
And I rewound it, and I counted again.
Wow.
Yes.
We see Wick picked up by Jawas. Oh, I mean, these guys that Barada said that would find him as he was almost on his deathbed. We then cut to the Elder as he asks John why he's here and why he wishes to live. Wick says to remember his wife Helen and to remember them together. The Elder says that he can make him live another life, though probably not what he's asking for. But he can get the adjudicator to reverse the price on his head. The Elder says that John needs to complete his task in order for Winston's excommunicado to be reversed. Wick says that he will be of service as the Elder casts aside his weakness. And Wick slices off his ring finger, offering his wedding ring to the Elder.
I think this is a great dilemma for your third act. Not only the, I don't want to call it humiliation, but he cuts off his ring finger and then takes the ring off the severed finger. It's that additional insult.
Yeah.
But we're going to prove your loyalty by killing the only person you probably have a genuine friendship left, who stuck his neck out for you. Are you going to do the same for him?
Yeah, I like this. Though, as somebody who used to produce movies myself, I just kind of looked at this like, oh God, they're going to have to CGI that finger off the entire rest of the film. That's going to cost some money.
He's going to be wearing mittens.
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck is going on in this desert? I
really? You don't like this?
Oh God, no.
He hates Tatooine, so this makes total sense.
It's sand. It gets everywhere. I like if you're setting up Wick versus Winston or even the possibility, but I never believe he's going to go after Winston. Mm-hmm. So you just don't have me there. And maybe that's my, you know, cynicism. So I have a problem with even the concept of the Elder. I have the problem with him just wandering in the desert. I understand he had a dream that he liked this image of Wick in the desert. I get it. And I guess you had to get a couple extra writers to figure it out. You didn't sell me on it. This turns me off a lot, everything that's going on here. I feel like this movie's just can't keep a steady pace when I feel like the last two films were just so adrenalizing and kinetic. And I feel like this can't, go from one gear to the next, that it's slipping. It can't find a clutch.
Wow, you're sounding like me last week. So the Elder accepts the ring as his offering, as his hand is burned, and the Elder wishes him good luck on his path. Wick looks at another suit as we cut to the city, to another subway. As Wick gets off, he's confronted by assassins, and he just walks right on by. Zero zeroes in on Wick, and as they walk toward each other with knives in hand, kids walk right on by. Wick stops, and Zero says this is why he's special, as he himself would not have stopped. Zero asks how his trip was, and this is when Wick takes out one of Zero's men. Wick attacks a couple bikers, and like Ethan Hunt before him, takes off on a motorcycle. The chase is on through New York as they go over the bridge, and Wick is once again attacked by a set of bikers. I do like this chase. I like how two of the bikes collide, even if it's a little too CGI. This was fun.
This is one of the scenes that I enjoy in Matrix 2. So to see it here done again, I think this is pretty badass. When they showed this in the trailer, this is kind of what had me excited. You know, it's shot beautifully. You see those bikes lining up and they pull out swords. Convenient as all hell, but you have guns when you need it. And then when you could kill a man with a gun, you just happen to have a sword. And I don't care because it looks beautiful and it's fun. And this kind of brought me back in. I'm excited when we get to New York. I think this is good shit.
Yeah, Adam's like, this is Home Alone 3 found in New York because the movie won me back. I should hate this because I don't come to these movies for motorcycle chases and vehicle stunts. I have Fast and Furious for that. Well, had Fast and Furious before they, you know, I missed that Uber and they left me at the station. But I like that the movie almost acknowledges that this needs to pump some adrenaline because they crank the music up for this.
Mm-hmm.
The chase continues through the city streets as they don't stop. They just jump off the moving bikes. Sharon then comes out and tells Zero to lower his gun as Wick says that he'd like to see the manager. Zero and Wick then walk into the Continental and Sharon tells them to take a seat. And this is when Zero tells Wick he's been looking forward to meeting him for a while as he's a huge fan. Wick's dog.
Yeah, I like that this is the like when baseball players
yes
get to meet Derek Jeter or something.
Yeah, I almost feel mm-hmm. like he's going to bust out a assassin card or something.
That'd be actually cool if they had like markers that other assassins could autograph.
Mm-hmm.
But just the choice to sit next to him on the couch and that awkward look. It's like going to a con, getting too close and seeing that look on somebody like, okay, boy.
Wick's dog jumps on him as Zero gives the "we're the same" speech that we've heard so many times before in these movies. He says they're both masters of death, as Wick tells his dog to sit. I think this is a callback to earlier when Sophia told him to sit. We cut to Wick approaching Winston, who says that they use the reflection room on special occasions, and asks Wick how eventful his journey has been. Wick says that he has served, now he will be of service. Winston tells Wick to put a bullet in his heart and that the table has asked him to step down. Winston says that he's not stepping down and that he'd rather Wick shoot him, as it would be at the hand of a friend instead of an enemy. He tells Wick he did the impossible as he got out, but came back as Helen was taken away from him. Winston then asks John who he wants to die as. I always like when Ian McShane and Keanu Reeves play off one another, and this was pretty good.
Don't like this scene.
Wow.
I generally love these two together. Look, I like seeing them side by side, but I feel like it makes Wick seem indecisive with what he's even going to do, and I don't get that from him. So I don't know. Something about, like, I get what they're going for. I just don't like the way that it's written. I think it's specifically the dialogue, the lines written just don't sit well with me. They don't feel natural. They don't feel like what I would expect coming out of Winston or John here.
Yeah, I feel like this scene was rewritten multiple times because they didn't know how to get to the third act. So they kind of hodgepodged everything together. Like, I think this is the problem when you have multiple writers on a franchise that less is more in almost every instance with dialogue.
We then see the adjudicator approach them both, and she tells Wick that it's nice to meet him. Winston says that he won't step down, and Wick says that he's not putting a bullet in Winston's head. The adjudicator then calls the administration, and she wants to change the designation at the Continental to deconsecrated. This means that business can now be conducted on their grounds. She orders them removed from the grounds as Winston says that they are safe no more. So, Adam, do you agree with this decision to make the Continental a place of combat now?
Yeah, I kind of dig this. Like, it's a good decision because if you're not playing by the rules we've set up, this is the consequence. So I like this. I think you could have went a couple different ways with it. I like that Winston's going to make the decision to clear everybody out. You know, he's going to put them all safe. Or it could have been the other way. You could have had this high table army that gets bust in here versus all of the occupants of the Continental. That would have been a completely different way to go. It could have been the raid type of movie. But instead, he's got an honor amongst him. And I appreciate that. I think this is badass.
Well, I like that we're setting, you're seeing consequences now on the largest scale they've ever done, because this has always been kind of every movie it gets less sanctimonious at the Continental, and we've seen the consequences if one person breaks it twice. Now what happens when the manager is removed and it's going to be like open season? Like, this is like dangling a cow carcass in front of a tank of piranha.
Wick requests lots and lots of guns as the adjudicator tells Zero that his business can now be conducted on Continental grounds. And I do like Sharon here. He's helping Wick get equipped. This is fun. Winston then puts on some music as lights shine and the fight is on. Winston tells Sharon he knows he'll do the Continental proud. And then he tells Wick to do what he does best, which is hunt.
Well, I like that instead of being on the run, it's now become a siege movie.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. Which I like. You know, this is kind of, you know, Adam hates this movie. They're doing the Skyfall thing.
They are, but this one's doing it well.
I got a ton of Matrix flashbacks here because we had this green hue just hovering over as Wick's fighting these guys. And he's not playing around here.
Basically, the ending of the third Matrix where they're barricaded and what do they call the robots? The Sentinels?
Sentinels, yeah.
Yeah, except this is actually fun to watch. It doesn't look like a PS2 video game.
Wick's then given some armor-piercing slugs, and we're getting some more gun-fu. This eventually leads to a red backdrop, and I really dig this fight in a pool. This was good.
What I'd like here, too, is that, you know, when it first starts out, John's out there, he's just shooting them down, you think it's done. And then they stand up, and he's like fuck, they got armor.
Yeah.
You know? And it completely changes the game. Even when Sharon comes back in, like, he looks a little pissed off, like, damn it, we got to change from this to this. Like, this is just, I feel like I'm watching different levels going up. I feel like, you know, you beat a boss, you think it's good, and then suddenly it's like game auto saving. You're like, oh shit, the color changes and you gotta go right back out there to a tougher level. The music, the choreography, the lighting, this, oh man, this is what you came for.
Yeah,
proper escalation, because we've only seen what the assassins can get their hands on. Mm-hmm. What does the high table have access to if they're gonna send their full, like,
armada? Watch them show up in watching them show up in like chartered buses just and shooting in water. For the first time ever, you get a movie like this properly showing how bullets react in water. Mm-hmm. They don't.
Yeah, they fall dead.
Yeah, it's so dense that they're worthless.
We didn't get a fight in this place of glass, and it's almost comical how many glass panes they're going through here. The final 20 minutes of this, I got a lot of video game vibes from it, because he's fighting through these guys to get to the boss, right?
Oh yeah, this is the raid.
Yeah, I thought of that too. Unfortunately, I don't like those movies.
Except I'm not exhausted like I am watching the race. Like this, I think there's a propulsion to it, but I don't feel exhausted. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot closer to like Dread, because Dread is basically the raid, you know, working your way, except that is not as long. I watched The Raid 2 in a theater, and I felt like I had to shower after that movie. It's like I had done a workout.
I think part of what works here is that every now and then, it'll pause to take a breath in this action scene, whether they're going back to restock, whether Winston is going to raise his eyebrow and take a drink of something, you know, because he's not going to get off his chair. The adjudicator calling him back up to be like, you think we're done? He just hung up on me. You know, there's little bits that let you take a breath, let you slip your Slurpee, and then it's going to keep going.
And I'm sure Garrett loved that they don't use the bulletproof suit.
Yes.
Crutch as much as they did in the last movie.
Yes, I did like that, and I did like what Adam just said. These plot summaries are much easier to do than the last series that we did. So I'm just sitting back and enjoying these fights.
You got like a 10-15 minute portion where it's just action. Yep. There's no talking, there's no nothing but just beautiful choreography. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get a chance to really talk about it last week. I know how they shoot in mirrored rooms. I know how they shoot in these kind of things. I don't care, because it looks fantastic and it looks like something that should be impossible.
There's some back and forth until Wick takes the guy's sword away and kicks him through glass for the last time. Wick then makes his way up as Zero claps, and Wick is once again told that it's an honor to meet him. We get this two-on-one fight as more glass is broken, this time by Wick as he's mocked for being retired for 5 years. And you can definitely tell, I don't know if this is Keanu Reeves acting or not, but he looks exhausted in this fight.
Well, also, like, God, there's so much glass breaking in this movie. There might as well fucking Steve Austin run out.
Speaking of wrestling, so the fight is on again, and Wick does much better this time as he eventually does an overhead belly-to-belly suplex. I wasn't expecting this. And then picks up the other guy and does a crucifix suplex right through the glass. Oh, and unlike last week where they're alluding to all the religious stuff, this one, we're just going up levels here, and I'm having fun with this. Wick then puts his hand to his heart and says, "Be seeing you," before laying eyes on Zero.
Now plain Zero.
You know what? As I was typing the name, I thought of that too. Zero says if he didn't have to kill him, he and Wick could have been pals. And we get this green screen, which is always moving. Zero again says that they're the same as they go back and forth for a bit, and Zero is the one to use the glass to his advantage first. Wick eventually renders Zero helpless as a Western theme plays, and Wick stabs him right through the heart.
I think both these fights are amazing. They're beautifully choreographed. I do think they each go on a little long, but I don't care when I'm watching it. It's really good stuff. I like the ending for the two henchmen, you know, that it ends with a sign of respect. They don't kill each other. You know, it's really nice. But here was Zero just through the hands and watching that katana slide down his hands while he's trying to hold it. Ugh. And then once he pierces him, he sits up. I'll be seeing you, John. I just got to catch my breath. That's us sitting there going, oh, all right, let me get my breath for a minute.
We see the safe open as Sharon walks through and the adjudicator suggests a parlay. Winston takes her up on it and then tells Sharon that they're in play. Zero sits up and says, that was a pretty good fight, huh? Again, playing the fanboy here. Wick agrees as the lights flicker. Zero says that he has to catch his breath, but he'll catch up to him later. And Wick just says, no, you won't. The adjudicator says that this is just the first wave, and Winston says that his allegiance goes beyond the Continental. After all, they're in New York City. He suggests that he keep his power, as he's been the stability of the high table for over 40 years. The adjudicator says that she accepts the offer, but asks what will be done about John Wick. Winston says that Wick has to go as he shoots him off the roof, and Sharon just says, well played, sir. So he knew that he could follow all these stories and just get up unscathed?
Stole my note. This is the one thing that, no pun intended, broke me, where I'm like, he should be fucking dead.
Yeah, he's doing this to save him. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, more than that, what the adjudicator wants out of Winston now is exactly what she wanted out of Winston beforehand. So this ending doesn't match up with everything we just went through to get here. Of anything, they should have killed the adjudicator, and it should be the Continental versus the high table.
Well, I also feel like, not to keep using wrestling, but I'm a whore. This feels like a swerve just for the sake of one.
I don't have the issue with Winston shooting John knowing what he wears, because all those are body shots directly into the side of the jacket. I don't have a problem falling off the side of the Continental. I do have a problem with him bouncing like a pinball between building and building and building fucking what looks like seven stories and crawling away.
Yeah, that's my just, thing. It's
a step too far. I mean, not to be discussing reality physics at the end of John Wick 3, but this is when they just, they stretch it.
No, but this is getting to like Die Hard 4, where he's on the roof of a plane and fucking falls down a shaft and he's totally okay. Like, there's rules and consequences, goddammit. And I'm fine with him shooting him, like you said, because he doesn't go for any vital organs. He knows what he's wearing, but it feels a little flimsy. It's almost like they didn't know how to. They're like, okay, we're on the third one. Maybe we could close everything out, but we also want to leave ourselves enough a clear lead in for a fourth one if we choose to.
Well, if you go from the first one to this one, it has what Matt likes to call heightened reality, right? Where we've seen Wick take a ton of punishment, but we have always said that Wick wears it on a sleeve. We see him, he is struggling to stand half the time because he is getting his ass kicked. Here, he's getting more than his ass kicked. He's getting bounced off the fucking roof of a Continental onto the pavement. It takes heightened reality to a new height, I guess you could say. And yeah, I don't go with this at all. The adjudicator says that Wick is gone and not on the street as we see the dog head over and we cut to Wick being pushed and drop off in a cart by this homeless guy that I guess the Bowery King sent. As Winston just says, Baba Yaga. The Bowery King says that John looks as bad as he feels and that they're about to find out if you cut the king, you better cut it quick. As he asks John how he feels, as he himself is pissed off, and John should be too. To this, John just says what I guess is his tagline to this series. Yeah. As credits roll on John Wick 3. How do we feel about this ending in the sewers, boys?
I thought this was cool. This too. It's a fun reunion. It's setting something interesting up because, again, he has no resources left. Like, he's used all of his goodwill. Yeah. His benefactor, in a lot of ways, has seemingly cut him off. But it's also consistent, though, because Winston gave him the head start in the second one. So I'm not as anticipatory as I was leading into this one. But I thought this was a cool little, like, setup. I mean, it's the cliche thing of you have to team up with your old enemy. Definitely. Like, that's very comic bookish.
I'd forgotten that the Bowery King survives. I hadn't watched this one to the end since movie theaters, so I had forgotten that he survives here at the end. I was like, oh shit, that's right, that is how he's saved. So I think it's cool. I think sitting there, you know, I guess Fanta's got rejuvenating powers. It makes sense. He's got his orange drink. It's fun. It's these two, there's something about him, and they're having a good time, and so am I.
So the problem is he drank Fanta instead of Mountain Dew. If he was drinking Mountain Dew, he would have been like... He would have been ready to fight everyone himself.
Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum? Adam, go ahead, sir.
So I might have sounded at times throughout this movie like I did not have as good a time as I did the previous two installments. I don't. I think the middle part of this movie's got some issues that are unacceptable for me. They take me out. But I love the way this movie starts. It starts off very fast-footed, gets you going. The action is great. The action is inventive. I mean, they got to keep finding ways to change stuff out, and they still find ways to do that. I don't care for a lot of what happens when we get to Casablanca, other than Halle Berry showing that she could still be a badass in her 50s as well. But I hate the desert. I can't stand anything to do with the Elder. You know, we kind of gloss over the high table just to get to this dude wandering in the fucking desert. God damn, it's the worst desert scene I've seen since Will Smith showing up in parachute pants. But once we get back to New York, this thing finishes strong. I love the scene in the Continental, all of it there. It's much more video gamey than I think we got the last 2 weeks. I think this turns a little cartoony. I think it just goes a little ridiculous with some areas where I think pulling back a little bit would have helped me out. It's a step down. As much as I like some of the additions, story-wise, I know you don't go to Wick for a story, but go back to that first one. Go to the second one. You build lore in a strong way, and I think this abandons some of the strong lore building, and that's kind of what I miss. But it's a 7. It doesn't overstay its welcome on the overall. This movie's still only 210 with credits. It feels a little longer, but I still have a damn good time with it. This is a 7. It's still a strong installment.
All right. So a very qualified 7 on 10 from Mr. Bunch. Matt, what say you?
Call me Troy Aikman, because I think I just secured a three-peat as far as championships go. Because, I mean, 3 in a row, I'm as shocked as anybody. And the even more surprising thing, I think these ones get better with every installment. Not going to say this is far and away the best one, but it's my favorite because I don't have those issues in the middle that Adam does. I like Casablanca as a setting because, that is one of the most famous movies of all time. And you think that would kind of be like sacred ground to kind of use that again. Because outside of that, you know, they did A Night in Casablanca with the Marx Brothers. And there was that Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard movie that takes place in Casablanca for part of it. This brings it back with a new coat of paint. And that coat is a bright red because holy shit, did they kill a lot of people in this movie. And that's kind of what I came in for because it was a ballet of carnage. And I don't just say that because of the Rusk aroma. I think all of the new pieces that are brought in from Angelica Houston and the Rusk aroma to the high table actually, they're finally getting out of their chair and doing something. It's like some of those Bond villains, like, are you actually going to do something? You're just going to sit there and let your henchmen do it. So rules and consequences and escalation should be the third part of this series. I think this is much like Rogue Nation and Mad Max Fury Road. I think it's one of the best action movies of the last 25 years. Like, I think it's a real standard bearer, as is this series for me. It's one of the most surprising comeback vehicle franchises we've ever seen. And I do think, not that Keanu Reeves is a weakness in these movies, but I think it's a compliment that you could argue he's the least interesting thing in his own movies, and they're still great, which I think goes to show that the world building that these movies have thrived on really make them stand out in a world defined by 2019 capes and green screen. This is a very, very strong, and I feel like Adam did with the second movie. This is a 9 for me.
All right. So if you cannot tell from my praise throughout this podcast, this is a massive step up for me from last week with Chapter 2 for people who were worried that I would be the grouse on this entire series. I think on top of everything else that I criticized Chapter 2 for, one thing I did not mention is throughout the midpoint of that movie, I was bored to tears. I'm like, look, I've seen all this before. I'm not really getting anything out of the additions. Please just let me out on a grand scale. And once Common got involved, I started enjoying myself again. But if I get to Chapter 3, I was never bored by anything on screen. Despite what Adam says, I enjoyed the Casablanca stuff. I enjoyed Wick going through the desert. Despite how ridiculous that is, you kind of got to go with the lore that they introduce there and they pay off. I enjoyed the Elder stuff. I enjoyed that they made this personal again, that they made this Wick literally cuts off his past to get to the end of this film. And I liked that juxtaposition. I liked the way this movie moves. I liked Halle Berry in this. And I think a lot of what happens here is a grand improvement over last week. And I will say it's even an improvement over the week before. So this so far is my favorite of the series. I'm only going to go a half point higher than the first one just because I think the way John Wick 1 introduces that character and introduces the world in the gritty, down-to-earth style that it does is what makes me really like it. And I can't say I like this that much more, even though it adds a hell of a lot more to it. So I want to go 8.5 out of 10. I like this movie a lot. And they had a tough road to climb because if they were going to try to top this one, this was pretty good. And I saw this twice in theaters and I could not wait for the next one. Speaking of the next one, that will lead me to next week. Next week, we are getting to John Wick Chapter 4. Adam, as somebody who was kind of the grouse on this one, you weren't a huge fan of Chapter 3. What are you expecting when we get to John Wick Chapter 4 next week?
It wasn't. And I didn't think I needed a 4. But I tell you, the second they put out a trailer, and the second that teaser showed, oh boy, seeing who was in it, seeing what they were doing, yeah, you're damn right, I was coming back. Yeah, John Wick 4 had me in his sights.
Wow, so despite your, I'm not going to say negative feelings, but for a lot of this movie, your not so positive feelings, you were excited for next week's film.
And no, also, when 3 was done, especially in theaters, I was like, okay, they finished it. Like, I didn't think they'd be able to improve. I was like, you know, once you start to do the downturn, just end it before you turn into the fucking Terminator franchise. But when I saw Donnie Yen, when I saw people like Hiroyuki Sanda, some of those characters, they were, I was excited when I saw the first glimpses of John Wick Chapter 4. I really was. I think that first trailer is pretty amazing to hype people back up for a fourth installment of a franchise that a lot of people would see as redundant. Fucking A, I was there opening night.
All right, Matt, I'm going to assume, just given your thoughts on this one, you were pretty excited for next week's film as well.
Oh, yeah, I was there opening night, and I saw this 3 times in movie theaters, which is quite the endorsement considering it's 3 goddamn hours.
That runtime did kind of scare me. I do remember that. And I did not see next week's movie in theaters for reasons that I'll get into when we reconvey. But yeah, I was definitely excited for this. Could not wait for it. But until next week, when we do get to John Wick Chapter 4, and the week after, when we get to The Ballerina, which we're ending this series on, I know you will do this podcast proud. Thank you, boys.
So, you want to kill him? You want to kill him? I want to kill him. What about you, Mr. Vic?
I'm going to kill you.
Oh, for better, of course, yeah. But it looks like we have ourselves a genuine conundrum.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Just have fun, Albert.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
What have you done? Finished it.
Check out the Percolated Media archives as we have tons of franchise reviews, including the Planet of the Apes franchise, Star Wars,
the ongoing Marvel series, Lethal Weapon series, the Alien franchise,
the Mad Max movies, Avatar,
Mission Impossible film series,
Jurassic Park, and so many more.
A man can stay here a long time I never eat the same meal twice.
Good day to you both.
3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Well, sometimes you gotta cut a motherfucker.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I have enjoyed his company.
The 3 Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Consider this a professional courtesy.
Scheduling done by Matt.
He's coming again.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Jonathan, just walk away.
Yeah, Jonathan, walk away.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
John Wick is a man of focus.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
He's excommunicado.
Unless you wish to become the same, I suggest you lower your gun.
We gotta go. Now.
All right, count me down. We will finish this.
Well, still got 2 more movies to go. Relax.
I know, but we'll finish it for today.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
It feels perfectly apropos to what we have.
Yeah, you know, they're setting up for Chapter 5 when he runs into Luka Doncic at a Chick-fil-A.
Did you say at a buffet? What'd you say?
Chick-fil-A.
Oh.
It's Chick-fil-A.
The fight is on. Music. We cut to the adjudicator? Adjudicator? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Adjudicator.
Okay, we cut to the adjudicator. I'll agree with you on the staging part, because at one point it looks like this dog just kind of takes this guy off this platform and he falls into padding. There are a couple weird
shots. Yeah, it's like when Canyon got thrown off this the cage in WCW, and it's so obviously padded. If there was never a microcosm of the fact that this company is on its way out, it was one at that moment.
Also, how'd this dog scale this wall? And he's not playing around here.
Basically, the ending of the third Matrix, where they're barricaded, mm-hmm. and the, what do they call the robots? The Sentinels?
Sentinels, yeah.
Yeah, except this is actually fun to watch. It doesn't look like a PS2 video game.
One of my best friends worked on those effects.
I know a lot of hard work went into those movies.
Yep.
None of it in the writing.
Wicks then.